WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Kusha Navidar, in for Allison Stewart. This past Sunday, Canadian rapper Drake released his response to Pulitzer Prize winner Kendrick Lamar's 9th diss track in a rap battle that has gone on for weeks. Throughout this feud, there have been rumors of Ozempic, a hidden child, height shaming, and serious allegations of abuse on both sides, including domestic violence and grooming. But this isn't the first time hip-hop artists have had a public spat. In the 2010s, there was Nicki Minaj versus Remy Ma. In the 2000s, 50 Cent versus Ja Rule, Nas versus Jay-Z, and in the 90s, the infamous beef between Tupac and Biggie. While conflict has been a part of hip-hop for decades, some things have changed. There's the advent of streaming, the use of artificial intelligence, cultural attitudes, social media. There's a lot that's changed. And to help us understand this latest rivalry in hip-hop, we're joined by Vulture music critic Craig Jenkins, who recently penned a reflection on the battle between Drake and Kendrick. It was titled, "What Are We to Do with All This Nastiness?" Craig, welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Are you a fan of either Drake or Kendrick Lamar? Or did you choose a side? What did you take away from the music they released in the last month and a half? Or what is a beef between two rappers that you will never forget about? How did their dislike of one another show up in the music? Give us a call. Send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. It's 212-433-WNYC. Or you can reach us on social. Just hit us up. We're at All of It WNYC. All right, Craig. So this rivalry between Drake and Kendrick Lamar began way before this year, but this latest chapter kicked off in March when Future, Metro Boomin, and Kendrick Lamar released the song Like That. What statement did Kendrick make in this song, and what was he responding to?
He essentially addressed Drake and J. Cole, who had released a song a while earlier called First Person Shooter. And there's been this sort of tier ranking with the three of them where they're considered the big three, you know, the preeminent mainstream hip hop guys. And so Kendrick is like, "You guys aren't on my level. I'm sorry that you think that there's, you know, that we're all the same kind of caliber of an artist, but you're not there with me," and a lot of threatening and stuff. And, you know, it had been sort of apparent that he didn't care for Drake for, you know, the preceding 10 years, little hints and things, you know, stray words that you could attribute to being about his sometime Canadian friend. But yeah, this, Like That was kind of a line in the sand, and you had to respond to it in some kind of a combative way. It was goading you to come back crazy.
What were the origins of the feud to begin with?
It's hard to really say, because there's that one point, you know, Drake took Kendrick out on tour, and Kendrick featured on each other's albums. Kendrick did an interlude on Drake's Take Care, and Drake was on, you know, the Poetic Justice song. But by 2013 or so, they're kind of throwing shots a little bit. There's Kendrick is saying stray stuff about Drake. He did a freestyle where he said he just tucked the Canadian, what did he say, he tucked an emotional rapper in his pajama clothes, and it was like obvious that, you know. So there's just been this sort of latent animosity places that would prick up, and you could you know, if you listen to their freestyles, there's just this elaborate lore, and there's all these verses that are kind of maybe about the other guy.
You know,
over the last 10 years,
it's interesting that you bring up how they're contemporaries, because I think this is such an important piece of this. How Drake has featured Kendrick, Kendrick has featured Drake. How have their careers developed in the last decade or so? How have their reputations changed? Can any of that explain this bifurcation?
There's definitely. So Drake starts out as this kind of real hip hop guy to an extent in the late 2000s mixtape guy. Kendrick is around the same time concurrently, sort of, you know, learning to rap it. And you could argue that they both have similar interests, that they both really admire Lil Wayne as a rapper. But they come at it from different angles, and they end up, Drake ends up really on the pop spectrum, and Kendrick ends up on this really kind of dense, like, literary thing. And for a while, it would work between them as friends, but you know, as the years passed, it just seemed like the impression around them is that they have very different jobs, and that fueled a lot of, you know, what's been said in this particular, some of what's been said, because a lot of it is just they've been digging around each other's circles and stuff. But yeah, there's a sense that Drake represents kind of commercialism and this sort of emotional internal music, and that Kendrick represents, you know, the culture, to what, you know, that's what the impression is in, you know.
Mm. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Craig Jenkins from Vulture, and we're talking about this feud between hip-hop megastars Drake and Kendrick Lamar, and the history of the diss track in general in hip-hop. And listeners, hey, we want to hear from you. Are you a fan of Drake or Kendrick? Did you choose a side? What did you take away from the music they released in the last month and a half? Or what are some diss tracks, or, you know, some feuds in hip hop that have really spoken to you, that you remember over the course of your life as a fan of hip hop? Give us a call, send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Craig, you mentioned that there is a lot of lore in this feud. Can you go into that lore a little bit? What really stands out to you?
They're just straight lines and songs that people have been picking up on over the last decade, where people feel like that, you know, that one person was addressing another after something happened after the fact. Many years later, you could look at a verse, and what was the most recent one that came up? There was a time that Drake apologized to Kendrick for something, and then there's a Kendrick verse where he's just like, "I don't want your apology," and you don't think this is a response to that because you're not hearing that song concurrently to the moment. But there's just a lot of verses where, like, where you think the one guy's talking about the other. There's this song, The Red Button. You know, there's just so many, like your classic rap beef, there's a lot of songs where they're overtly talking about each other. And then mm-hmm. There's just this sort of back alley of, you know, stuff that you could attribute maybe to one guy. And which feeds into, you know, the core dispute, which is he talking about me? What is he saying about me? And you know, getting the wrong idea and getting on a negative page.
Yeah,
they've been goading each other for a long time.
It kind of reaches a fever pitch, like you were saying, to the point where there is a line drawn in the sand and they have to respond, right?
Over the weekend, yeah. Things went crazy.
You know, I remember back in 2018, Kendrick Lamar won the Pulitzer for his critically acclaimed album, Damn. And for some people, they're like, a Pulitzer winner dishing out diss tracks? Why do you think Kendrick is engaging in this way? Why is it important for him as an artist? How does it fit his brand?
I can speak as a nominee for criticism who has had plenty of squabbles on the internet that, you know, the prestige is nice and it is a great thing to have, but also you're still in your world that you're in and, you know, not necessarily beholden to different laws. More people are aware of him and more expectations are on him, but at the end of the day, he's still a Los Angeles rapper, and that comes with, you know, a certain library of expectations and dangers and, you know, linguistics.
And so it's a very authentic element, right, is what I hear you saying. It's like you're still in the world. Forget about the accolades. Forget about whatever titles. Like, you are the artist that you became. Is that a fair summary right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, the thing is actually about authenticity, because we've watched Drake, you know, adapt to musical trends over the last 15 years in a way that he's very much not the guy that he used to be musically. Mm. And this beef is a lot, you know, to a great extent about the guy who changes and the guy who's just been kind of burrowing into a specific version of himself artistically.
Right. Like Kendrick is becoming more Kendrick and Drake is who is Drake. Is that how you'd say that?
That's how it's been framed.
Okay. Is that a fair
because
frame?
You know, it's not possible to know the guy behind the scenes, which is what's been the subject of a lot of this beef is who is this person really who he presents, you know, publicly. And so Drake is saying you guys have this, you know, woke champion who is not living up to his standards. And Kendrick is saying, who is this guy from one week to the next? And well, I mean, you know, people, the way that the songs are percolating, it says that people like one version of this better than they do the other.
You know, Kendrick isn't the only rapper who's thrown shots at Drake. Fans have credited Houston rapper Megan Thee Stallion for throwing the first stone this year when she remarked on his alleged plastic surgery and criticized his fake accents in his songs in her single Hiss. We have a clip. Let's listen to that right now.
Y'all goofy look so dumb every time y'all celebrate fake news. Using my name for likes and views. I don't what y'all make trend. I still win. Ain't you here? I ain't scared. Any man go against me, I hear. I'm a Teflon Don in the courtroom. They be throwing that dirt. All these little rappers so fraud. Xanax be they hardest bars. Hate on BBL and be walking around with the same scars. Real curvy, no etching. Fight to get in my section. Don't speak on my body count if the ain't worth coming back for seconds. Cosplay, gangsters, fake-ass, posted in another hood like a bad
Since we're on public radio, we heard a lot of bleeps there. Suffice to say, there's a lot of animosity in what we hear Megan Thee Stallion talking about. Since the battle between Drake and Kendrick started, other rappers like Rick Ross and producer Metro Boomin have shared their dislike of Drake. Why is he getting so much hate, especially now?
He is a troublemaker. He talks a lot of trash. Megan got at him because he got at her randomly on a song on his last album when he's been joking about how he doesn't think that she got shot and taken up for Tory Lanez, who, you know, is locked up for that crime right now in a way that feels deliberately designed to antagonize her because he'd never really cared for Tory Lanez. Drake has released what everyone assumes is a diss track for Tory Lanez in the past. So, you know, to support that guy is to say, hey, I'm clicking up with people you don't like, you know, the classic rapper drawing the lines in the sand via association. So yeah, the reason why there are eight guys in it is that, you know, you can pick up the new Drake album and hear subliminals for five different people. You know, you can hear, so he's got it with ASAP Rocky. He's got it with Rick Ross. He didn't have to do that thing with Rick Ross. They have a long history of really good collaborations, and you would think some of the best, you know, chemistry in between two rappers. But, you know, things, one guy unfollows the other, and Drake invites Rick Ross's ex to a concert, and then it's just like off to the races since there. You know, so there's an element of the guy goes really hard, and maybe a lot of people, you know, never fill a room full of people who wish ill upon you, because then you get stuff like, you know, Future and Metro and ASAP Rocky and Rick Ross and The Weeknd snapping on you at the same time.
We've got a caller, Chuck from Bloomfield, New Jersey. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, thanks. How's What's your experience with the diss track?
So I'm a professional musician. I'm just not in the hip hop scene. I write music for like video games and nerdy stuff.
But oh, incredible. I love video game music.
Yeah, oh, it's a completely different beast of its own. But, you know, having been a professional musician for, you know, a really long time, I have to listen to just about everything in order to be a well-rounded musician. So I listen to a lot of hip-hop, and I've been, you know, kind of just trying to extract as much as I can from the experience. Recently with Kendrick and Drake. I love Kendrick Lamar's records. I'm not a huge Drake fan, but I wanted to briefly discuss the concept of the difference between the boast track and the diss track and how the boast track is more about anonymity and exalting yourself, saying how much better you are than your contemporaries or those who came before you and how nobody can touch you, whereas a diss track is more directed at a person, And one thing that I remember very clearly was Machine Gun Kelly, now known as MGK, sort of making his way into the rap scene through TikTok, of all the places, TikTok. And he essentially calls Eminem out for being a washed up old like white dad figure, you know, like he's not as good as he was before he got clean. And meanwhile, Eminem has this huge a history with Dr. Dre, and having come from poverty and having come from a really rough childhood, having really heavy things to rap about. And Eminem just releases a track and chases MGK out to the world of pop punk, where
Chuck, I'm going to have to pause you there. Thank you so much for calling in just for time. But, you know, you brought up a really good point there, and we really appreciate having a professional musician, even one from
Eminem
other elements of it.
Definitely
there.
The beef figure that should probably come up in this, a ruthless guy who loves, you know, loves the back and forth and has been involved in that for a long time. I feel like Machine Gun Kelly was making points about him, unfortunately, like some truth was told. But yeah, he doesn't, you know, he makes pop punk now. It's true. Yeah, there was like an Eminem-ishness to the way that Kendrick was going at Drake. He was saying stuff that you shouldn't really say to people, you know, "Dear Adonis, I'm sorry, that man is your father." Talking to his mom and his son about, "Here's why your dad is a terrible person." Just like, There was a lot of offsides discourse and you know, Drake being like, "Oh, you know, do you beat your wife because she's taller than you?" Just horrific stuff was said.
Is there a line in the sand when you talk about diss tracks that people are expected not to cross, Craig?
Well, the story goes that you can say whatever you want, but I mean, the other side of it is that there are repercussions for the way that you deal. And so Drake immediately starts yelling about people's wives and beef, like he went at Pusha T's, you know, going at the mother of someone's children in the middle of the dispute is definitely a way to catch the worst side of a person. And he did it with Pusha T, and he did it with Kendrick, and those guys went absolutely, you know, and then it just became a matter of pacing, and it was a really wild weekend because you couldn't go to sleep without, you know, something dropping. Two diss tracks might drop in the same hour, addressing different stuff, you know, laying out claims that could be false or true, you know, debunking stuff. And it was just like, it was the most 2024 thing. It was just, what's the fake news, you know, who's canceled, kind of kind of a conversation. They were trying to get each other canceled, and I don't think that it's possible for either one of them.
Well,
in,
you know,
the field right now.
2 points about that. It sounds like you're bringing up Newton's third law version of hip hop, which is for every diss track, there is an equal and opposite diss track, and you need to face the repercussions of what you're saying. Also, I love that you brought
it. Might not even happen on wax also. Like, sometimes there's a diss track and, you know, you hear about it from the person showing up, you know.
Yeah, and I also,
there's always that danger.
I also love that you bring up the idea of Eminemishness, which I think is a new term that you just coined for us on WNYC. Talking.
Like, there's an impishness to him. He like enjoys getting under people's skin and will absolutely torch like a song, just being like, "All right, this is about this guy, no longer the subject matter."
Yeah, we're talking to Craig Jenkins from The Vulture. We're talking about the feud between hip-hop megastars Drake and Kendrick Lamar and the history of the diss track. Listen, we got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Candace McDuffie, the Root senior writer, and we're going to take more of your calls. We're talking about diss tracks. Stay with us. We'll get back to it. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navidar, and we're talking about the diss track, D-I-S-S. There's this hip-hop megastar feud going on right now between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. And, you know, they're firing shots at each other, everyone. And we've got to talk about it with us, Craig Jenkins, the Vulture critic. Listeners, we want to hear from you, too. Do you have opinions about this feud that's going on? Is there a feud in hip-hop that resonates with you? Is there a side that you've chosen? Give us a call, send us a text. We're at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You know, Craig, we talked a lot about what's going on in the present, but this also has a rich history to it, too, with hip-hop. Can you talk a little bit about the history of the diss track?
There are so many legendary, you know, on wax kind of bust ups in music history, particularly in hip hop. You know, in the '80s, we had, you know, the classic Bridge Wars in New York City, which was just like a battle for dominance, you know, between a lot of luminaries, you know, KRS-One, Marley Marl, all those guys, MC Shan, just legendary stuff in the '80s, the Roxanne Wars with Roxanne Shanté and various impersonators. In the '90s, there was the East Coast, West Coast feud. The big thing with, well, I mean, there were so many. There was Bone Thugs and Harmony in the Midwest versus 3-6 Mafia. There was Common in the Midwest versus Ice Cube, a classic battle. But, you know, there was the coastal thing between the East and the West with, you know, Tupac and Biggie, unfortunately, losing their lives in the middle of that. But, you know, all the sort of intramural stuff, like Snoop Dogg making a video where he's kicking down the Twin Towers. Jay-Z and Nas happened sort of like after that. They're just like the entire history of hip hop is a history of disputes, is a history of guys saying that they're better than the other guy, women saying that they're better than the other woman, saying that they're better than the men. It's just like, you know, the roots of the culture come from, you know, Jamaican toasts come from all this, all these rich histories of braggadociousness and you know, storytelling, incredible raconteur skills. So when you don't like somebody, you're going to weave your narrative about them in that same way that you do anything else. And we get to Drake and Kendrick tapping into that rich history. And it's not just a hip hop thing either, because there's classic diss tracks like Sweet Home Alabama has Neil Young, shots for Neil Young in it. Like every genre has some kind of a version of that a while.
Do you feel like, because you're right, it does exist cross genre. Do you feel like this idea of the diss track of engaging elevates and energizes artists as well? Like it actually adds to the music?
It can make music, it can revitalize a writer to have their, you know, entire, it can revitalize a writer and sharpen the pen to have their entire character challenge. Also, it can get people killed because they talk too wild in the process. A lot can happen, but it is often pretty good for culture until it's not, kind of a situation,
right?
Which is the crux of Tupac versus Biggie, is that like, wow, we got so much incredible music out of it and then we lost both guys.
It's playing with fire a little
Yeah, and there's that danger with Drake and Kendrick. Now, we didn't think that either of these guys were the type of guys who we would have to hear about gunfire around, and yet someone has gone to someone's house to shoot somebody. So we have to have the old conversation again about whether it's necessarily all that wise to be goading this kind of action on endlessly, and at what point there's at what point you have to kind of get back to reality, because everybody has to work in the business.
Right.
And when it's staticky, people die. Like, simple as that.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, listeners, we're talking to Craig Jenkins, who's a Vulture critic, and we are talking about the feud between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. Sorry. If you have an opinion on this, give us a call. We're at 212-433-9692. And we have a super caller on the line with us. Candace McDuffie is a senior writer for The Root and Culture Critic, whose work has been featured in publications like Rolling Stone, MTV, NBC News, and Essence. Candace, hi, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So you recently published a piece titled Women Are Collateral Damage in the Kendrick-Drake Beef, and it's nothing new. The feud between the two artists took a gross turn on Saturday when Kendrick accused Drake of both being a pedophile and keeping sex offenders on his record label, OVO's payroll. But prior to this, Drake suggested Kendrick physically abused his fiancée, Whitney Alford. So where are these allegations coming from, and how have music fans responded to them?
I mean, it was a desperate grab for Drake. Kendrick came at him originally for being a culture vulture, for using, you know, his celebrity influence to kind of commodify blackness, to make money and to be popular. And Drake wanted to hit below the belt. And these allegations of Kendrick allegedly hitting his fiance, you know, is what he chose to use. Fans have been so disgusted by, you know, Drake and Kendrick, you know, alleging sexual and physical abuse as a way to hurt each other, as opposed to, you know, actually taking these allegations seriously and trying to get justice for these alleged victims. It's been really hard to watch.
And what do you make of it? Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead. Yeah.
I think people are taking the wrong message from Not Like Us, which is a record about, you know, disassociating yourselves from people who have these terrible situations. Now, if you know, it doesn't take the shine around the song and how everyone's really running with it and loves it does not take into account that we have heard allegations about Kendrick now. Mm-hmm. You to run with mm-hmm. it, to keep running with it when it's telling you stop supporting people who have the, what if we have to stop supporting both of the guys is kind of the conversation that's not really being had right now about it, and that's frustrating.
Well,
amid the Kendrick one kind of wave that people have, there is no okay, but now you know he's not the, what if he's not the upstanding guy that everyone thinks that he is? That's not being considered enough, I don't think.
Hey, Candace, what do you make of that?
I agree. I think people enjoy Not Like Us so much that they're overlooking the allegations that Kendrick has been accused of. But at the same time, those dialogues are being had online, just not on the scale that they should be.
And, you know,
yeah, I don't want to shortchange and say they're not happening. Just, you know, in the hallowed places where all the rap media guys meet on the big academics is not talking about it. Those kinds of characters are will never, you know, there's not enough reckoning with everything that's been on the table with this and with the horribleness of it and with what to do about it, because we have this record now that is real fun. And it's fun to yell at a guy and get a guy out of there who's been really annoying. But at what point is there a wider reckoning? Because this is the same culture that allowed everything that's happened with R. Kelly to happen. This is the culture that we'll hear about whatever Diddy's up for this year. But the underpinning of this is that, yeah, this the industry that produced those guys could still be producing monsters, and we're not doing anything about it but having a laugh.
Right. Candace, unfortunately, we got to let you go, but thank you so much for calling in. Candace McDuffie is a senior writer for The Root. Thank you again for joining.
Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
And well, no,
I was
no
really
worries,
fired up about this aspect of this.
Absolutely, similar. I mean, it diss tracks get people energized, and you know, we're running right up against the clock. But I want to make sure that we hear one of the latest tracks from Kendrick, "Not Like Us." The cover art is an aerial map image of Drake's mansion in Toronto. Let's hear a quick clip,
which
from
has
there.
Now been shot at.
We'll talk about that in a second. Let's listen to a quick clip there.
They not like us, they not like us, they not like us. They not like us, they not like us, they not like us. Once upon a time, all of us was in chains. Homies still double down, calling us some slaves. Atlanta was the mecca, building railroads and trains. Bear with me for a second, let me put y'all on game. The settlers
was using town. You know, Craig, you just mentioned that this place was shot at, and throughout this rap battle, Kendrick Lamar has poked at Drake, who is mixed, calling him white boy, but in this song, he called him a colonizer. Can you tell us what Kendrick meant by this, and how does he view Drake's role as a fixture within hip-hop culture and black culture overall?
The colorism aspect of it is the nastiest part, because there is on the one hand a kind of truth to the fact that Drake is someone who moves into a city and really gets deep into the culture of it and starts showing up with all the legends and stuff and picking up the local customs. But, you know, to hit at his blackness is to insult a lot of people beyond him. There's, you know, just because his mother is white doesn't mean that he can't naturally grasp the customs. It's the kind of guy that he is that makes that the case. And that's not really necessarily coming out enough in the beef. But, you know, it's no holds barred, so you're supposed to say the rudest stuff.
Yeah,
all the time to the other guy.
And you know,
there's no balance.
And I'm wondering, how do you think people are going to look back on this rivalry? How will hip-hop fans think about this legacy?
Oh, it'll just, we'll look back and say it was a great time for hip-hop, and we probably won't reckon with all the horrific feelings that we have right now, because the cathartic sense of having finally had it out and all the business it's created and all the excitement that is created and all the perhaps long overdue conversations about, you know, usurping people's talent and appropriating local scenes, that stuff, we'll look back fondly at that stuff, and we'll probably ignore the more difficult and prickly aspects of it, I feel like. Because it's already kind of like there's a joy that the one guy won, and in the other fandom it's like, oh no, his fans are everyone is like, their fans are delusional, and that's what the takeaway is. I just feel like what's important about this, which is that you never know what kind of a guy the celebrity is, whether or not he's portraying you know, this upright figure, or whether or not he's portraying as this kind of mobster. You never know what he's doing behind the scenes and who he could be hurting behind the scenes, or who, you know, what horrific thing he's willing to say on record.
Yeah.
That all that will probably get lost, and we'll just, you know, be in the bask in the glow of, you know, that time that we bumped those records outside and the one guy got upstaged. I can see that happen.
Yeah, well, we'll leave it there. It's multi-layered. Like you said, it's been a decade in the making. We've been discussing the feud between hip-hop megastars Drake and Kendrick Lamar and the history of the diss track. My guest has been Vulture music critic Craig Jenkins. Craig, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Sorry it was a lore bomb of a conversation, but there is so much.
No worries. It's been my pleasure. That's it for today's episode of All of It. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Have a great one. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.